Welcome to this edition of Buy Hold Sell, brought to you by Livewire Markets, Australia's number one website for expert investment analysis. Buy Hold Sell is a weekly show where two fund managers share their views on a selection of listed companies in their area of expertise. Buyers and sellers are what make the market, and you'll find that our guests don't always agree on the stocks being covered. Hit the subscribe button on your podcast player to be the first to receive new episodes each week. If there are stocks you'd like our guests to discuss, let us know by leaving a comment in the review segment. Remember, the views expressed in this show are not recommendations to invest. You should seek appropriate investment advice before making any investment decisions. And of course, please read the disclaimer in the show's notes. Let's get into the show.
Welcome to Livewire's Buy, Hold, Sell. I'm Ali Selby, and today for this thematic episode, we'll be taking a trip to the moon in the search of the next 100 bagger. My co-pilots today are Heath Beneke from Holon and Michael Frazis from Frazis Capital Partners. Plus, we've also asked our fundies to shoot for the stars and share their highest conviction holding right now. Michael, I might start on you. With valuations where they are right now, are you finding it difficult to find global growth opportunities?
Look, I think there's a pretty compelling opportunity set at the moment. I mean, everything's just moving so fast these days. You know, people can spin up companies and they can be global leaders within a few short years. So it always seems to be like a new breed of companies trying to, you know, really achieve great things. More recently, there's been a bit of a shakeout in markets. So interest rates started rising. NASDAQ was down nearly 3% last night. And a lot of the most kind of favored growth stocks, particularly in, say, the software sector, we're down 5%, in some cases more. So there's definitely opportunities out there if you know where to look.
Heath, same question to you. Are you using recent weakness as a buying opportunity?
Yeah, definitely. We definitely have, Ali. So we've seen, as you know, Michael's indicating, that rotation that's happened this year. So everybody, you know, things start to actually open up as a great opportunity to take advantage of, you know, some of the things that we see, particularly post-COVID, where, you know, I think we'll underestimate some of the change that's coming as a result of, you know, what COVID engendered is some of those behavioural changes in the way people operate on an ongoing basis. So, yeah, I think there's some great opportunities that have been popping up. And otherwise, what is a very, very low growth world, if anything, no growth in many ways.
Heath, I'd love to know what metrics you use to find and analyze global growth opportunities and how these kind of differ from traditional metrics.
Yeah, I suppose the main thing that we're always looking for, Ali, is like very strong value propositions. There are very well-founded metrics that you can actually utilize: customer lifetime value, customer acquisition costs, you know, revenue, price to sales, and other models that really matter. But eventually, like with everything we look at, we're looking at, profitability. Like that's you have to get propositions that will be sound financially from that perspective. A lot of things what people misunderstand, and many things that we look at, Ali, are actually could be highly profitable today. They're just scaling at a very, very rapid rate. And that's the thing where once you start to really understand that dynamic in this era of cloud and smartphone, then you start to look at things differently.
Michael, same question to you. We've spoken about the metrics that you used before. Could you take us through them?
Yeah, I mean, it might be helpful to think about the metrics that, you know, we don't use or that can be very misleading and difficult for people to interpret. So one of those would be, for example, free cash flow. And this is purely in the kind of high growth tech and biotech kind of place that we play in. And the reason for that is the best companies in the world that are growing really fast have the best growth opportunities, you know, can open up new offices, launch new products, and get tremendous amounts of sales and increase in size at rapid rates. So, you know, they'll hire salespeople, they'll spend on R&D, they'll do all these kinds of exciting things. And generally, often they'll manage their free cash flow to zero. And so when you're thinking about metrics, I think it's interesting that, you know, if you use free cash flow, which most people will start at, you know, you immediately rule out almost all of the companies with the best investment opportunities that can really hire a small group of people and achieve great things. So in terms of what you'd use instead, you can measure kind of the return on that investment, on the return on hiring a sales team, on spending on acquisition costs, as Heath said, you know, lifetime value, all those kinds of things. There's very good ways to assess kind of fundamental profitability before that. But ultimately what we really look for is also execution and delivering on the top line. So could you add users? Are users spending more and more? Are your revenues growing at a rapid rate? And often that's a good place to start when kind of assessing, you know, opportunities, particularly high returning opportunities.
If you had to choose three essential characteristics of explosive growth stocks, what would they be?
We like to start with the customer. So be true customer love. The second thing is we want to see that the results come through. And we try not to have opinions. We want to see companies growing really fast. So the second thing we'll look for is explosive revenue growth. And the third thing we'll look for, which is the most challenging and kind of where the art is rather than the science, is to assess their return on investment. And in fast growing companies, often the investment is not in capital. It's not in factories. They're not buying buildings. They're investing in people. They're paying out salaries and bonuses. And calculating the return on that is non-trivial. But the companies that do best are the ones that get the highest return on that. So the third thing we look for is an extremely high return on investment.
Okay, same question to you, Heath. What are three characteristics of global growth opportunities?
So we look for the first one, Ali, is a very simple and strong value proposition. It's very clear to all stakeholders in the ecosystem. The second one is scalability, the transferability of that globally. And the third one is the founder and the management team, who's actually on the bus. It's very, very critical. So get the right people on the bus, you'll solve all the problems and execute on the opportunity. So we just keep it very simple in general, and the simpler the conversation, the easier it is to scale.
We've also asked you to bring along a handy tip for investors today. It's quite a big global universe out there. What is one tip that they can use to help scour that universe?
Look, the first thing I would say to people is pay attention to what your children are doing. And that's probably that's probably the best way to start investing and to really do it through referral. That's the way I've tended to work over my career, actually. A lot of things I've invested just come through great referrals of people who have talked glowingly about the product or service. And I think that's always a good way to start, particularly to keep on, you know, to keep on top of where things are going.
Michael, same question to you. What's your one tip so investors can better scour the investment universe?
I'd probably kind of agree largely with Heath. You know, start with customers, start with the product, see what people really like. If I had to give one tip though, it would probably be you're probably going to do best if you stay with fast growing tech businesses that people really like. That is probably where you're going to get the most consistent long-term returns. That's where capital's flowing. That's where revenues are flowing within industries. If you stay on the right side of all those shifts, and it can be as simple as buying, you know, a NASDAQ 100 ETF or equivalent Australian tech index, I think give yourself the best chance of success by starting there.
I know you both invest in China. With everything that we've seen going on over the last few weeks, Michael, I might start on you. Are you still investing in that region? Or are you steering clear of it?
Look, we have some long-standing positions there. So one of ours is Pinduoduo. You know, it's still up about 4 times from when we bought it, though obviously it was up a lot more about 6 months ago. The rest of our exposure is largely Hong Kong-based. I mean, this is would be naive to think that in Sydney we can sit here and say exactly what is happening. I do think long-term, there are very good reasons that the Chinese want these companies to be strong, prosperous, powerful, and those are important considerations.
Over to you, Heath, same question. Are you still investing in China at the moment, or are you steering clear of the region?
Yeah, no, absolutely, Ali. We've got a strong view that China is starting to really is leading the game when it comes to technology and innovation. So, you know, nearly a third of our portfolio is there now. We've added to that, taking advantage of the weakness. And it's kind of the world is like seeing through China through Western eyes as opposed to looking through Eastern eyes. And you can see that they're balancing things out, something which probably should be done actually in some ways in the West with some of the what's going on with in some of the dominance and some of the companies. But we think that there's just a glaring opportunity at the moment to put money to work in businesses which are trading up, like valuation is not the concern. It's just everybody's thinking that the Chinese are going to socialize the entire market, which we just don't think that'll be the case at all. We think they're just making adjustments to the model. So we do think there's like some great opportunities actually popping up there. We just, you need to think more long-term about the opportunities. I just don't see why China would want to reverse the position that's basically got 800 million people out of poverty.
There's always been a huge sell-off and all in the horrific news flow and all kinds of things. But interestingly, like now that markets have come off and all those stocks are trading so cheap, the future returns are much higher. So the risks are roughly the same. If anything, it's kind of clearer, increasingly clear with each kind of regulation that comes out, what the final landscape is going to look like. So in many ways, you've got clearer risks, but much higher return going forward. It's kind of like, as he said, I think you have to be long-term if you're in a market like that. What you can't do is invest and then some news flow comes out and then you sell your stocks when they're down 30, 40, 50%. Like that's just going to be a loss-making proposition in any market that you do it. So I think if you invest in China, you have to be in it for at least 3 to 5 years from here. And if you think on those along that time frame and ask the questions around where should you be over 3 to 5 years, you get very different answers as to the question of what do you think is going to happen next in markets, which of course nobody can really answer.
Well, it sounds like both of you guys are buying when there's blood in the streets. I'd love to know how you know when to add to a position or when to sell down a position. Michael, I might start on you. Is there an example of both?
We will look at the company and see if it's growing or shrinking. So every quarter you get a good snapshot. We try not to move too fast and trade too much. So really take a look at the data. If they're adding users, they're growing, they're bigger, better, and stronger, we're much more inclined to kind of add if it's down. Similarly, we'll do the same thing when we sell. Often that doesn't work. So there's two examples I'll give where we sold probably too early after company slowed down. One was Xero. So Xero slowed down to kind of 30%, but all of a sudden started generating free cash flow and got a whole new set of institutional investors and the multiple doubled. So a lot of people think that like as growth slows down in these growth stocks, they go down. Sorry, valuations go down. But in actuality, what we've seen in more than one instance is those valuations go up.
Over to you, Heath. What are the signals that you look out for when to know to sell down a position? And on the other side of the coin, when do you know to add to your position as well?
We got a valuation that we on every company, Ali, and then essentially we're really contrasting at point in time where these companies are relative to that valuation. So you might find there's on weakness when they've come, the price is well below the valuation, we start adding, or when there's when it starts coming above the valuation, then we'll start selling. So simply it's just moderated each time we continue to roll forward and update our valuations, and we just continue to monitor the progress on an ongoing basis.
Are there any examples that you could take us through quickly?
Yeah, Tesla was a great example of that. It was substantially undervalued. Went 7 times since when we initially invested. And then, of course, the valuation starts getting pulled forward and realized. And then we started selling the position down. Still holding in the portfolio, but it was actually on a lower weighting. And then we bought back in on weakness as well when the company actually started trading below what we thought the valuation was as well. And we've done this with several other stocks over time, Afterpay, Xero, and others with a very similar viewpoint where we have it take a viewpoint on where we think the development should be at any point in time. And we trade, and then we will be pragmatic enough to actually buy or sell around those positions at the margin.
Okay, Heath, we asked you to bring along your highest conviction holding today. What is it and why do you think it can become a 100-bagger?
Well, in our portfolio, Ali, that has to come out of the Web3 space, which is Bitcoin. So we've got MicroStrategy in the portfolio, particularly post what's happened in 2020 with one of the major banking regulators in the US getting on board, the OCC. We can see that post that conversation, Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, just about all major institutions in the world are now getting on board, solving adoption. And the question is just how much adoption is being solved. So we think there's a real probability over time that this will continue to grow as the Web3 ecosystem grows. And so just it is hard to see where it's come from. It's had quite a lot of people think, wow, this is big. But actually, when you look at the opportunity set where it could emerge into, it is a very, very big conversation that Bitcoin's actually solving in terms of infrastructure for our money as we move forward as digital gold. So we think that's actually got a hell of a lot of legs as we move forward would be our highest conviction bet.
Okay, Michael, same question to you, your time in the hot seat. What's your 100 bagger stock and why?
Look, my highest conviction holding at the moment is C Limited. Based out of Asia, kind of Asia ex-China. Its company has two key businesses. It's e-commerce and gaming. It's in one of the fastest growing parts of the world, population-wise. Also one of the parts of the world that's increasing in kind of income and wealth at an incredible rate. The interesting thing about this is, you know, e-commerce in these parts of the world is like mid-single digits, like 4, 5, 6% in countries like Indonesia, Taiwan, Thailand. That's a long way to go to kind of 35, 40% where it is in China, and even 20% where it is, you know, around 20, 25% where it is in countries like Australia. So huge tailwind. You know, you've got a really young, effectively much poorer population than other parts of the world that's growing extremely rapidly, and penetration is really low in those parts of the world as well. So you've got these multiple compounding layers of growth. There's other interesting parts of the story. So they have what is often the most popular game called Free Fire. It's kind of like a shooting game. It's optimized for low-end smartphones. Very popular in places like India, South America. And again, they're going to be able to use the free cash flow from having, you know, one of the most successful games ever to fund e-commerce. And we all know how powerful, you know, e-commerce can be to the market leader. You know, once you have that market leadership position, you generally have a wider range of goods, you can offer lower prices, and you just have a better delivery network as well. And so I'm kind of cheating a bit because this stock is already up about 8, 9, 10 times, and I don't, about 8 times since we bought it. And I don't think it'll go up 100 times from here, but quite possibly from where it was 2 years ago. You know, it's a $180 billion company. I think it's going to be one of the, you know, the true global leaders, and really excited about it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It was such a pleasure to speak to you both. Thank you again. If you enjoyed this episode of Buy, Hold, Sell, why not give it a like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're adding new content every week.
Thanks for listening to Buy, Hold, Sell, brought to you by Livewire Markets, Australia's number one source of expert investment analysis. Register for free at livewiremarkets.com to discover more exclusive investing articles, videos, and podcasts.